No dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bro. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 81 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will talk about what we've been eating, do some follow-up from episode 79's discussion about an action turned violent, and then dedicate the rest of the show to various news stories that have piqued our interest and blown up our inbox, including Domino's Pizza rejecting vegan options and the implications of China opening up trade to allow import of U.S. beef. Whew. It was a mouthful.
It was. We got a real hodgepodge of various interesting topics going on today.
Yeah, you haven't given me a good run-on sentence in a while, Andy.
I got to keep you on your toes. I have to surprise you. Mm-hmm. You can't get used to the run-on sentence introduction.
So let's get into it then. Andy, what have you been eating?
Well, Paul, as you know, I am quite the traveler.
Quite.
I've been to a lot of states, and it's very rare for me to visit a new state. But since I was at the Milwaukee Veg Expo, I was like, I am so close to a couple states I'd never been to before. And so I went to Minneapolis, where I had been, but I went to the butcher, the herbivorous butcher, last week. And then I was a mere 5 hours from Fargo, North Dakota.
Which is child's play for you.
For me, that is a totally reasonable drive. So I made the trek. I drove to Fargo, North Dakota, and checked off state number 46 on my list.
Woo!
Yes. And for anyone curious, I also checked off 47 as I am in South Dakota as well.
Nice.
But I went to the only all-vegan restaurant in Fargo, North Dakota.
One vegan restaurant,
and then not even like a vegetarian restaurant. But I have to say, this place was awesome. I really enjoyed it. It's called the Greenhouse Cafe, and it's like right in their downtown area. And there's not really a specific focus, but, you know, it's kind of like sandwiches and bowls and salads and things like that. But it's not like super hippy-dippy, like super crunchy, healthy kind of stuff. I went for the barbecue chicken bowl, which was brown rice and black beans and roasted corn. And then they had their chicken, which I think was actually soy curls. It was very close to soy curls. And then their barbecue sauce and then like crispy onions on top.
Oh, that sounds good.
It was really good. It was simple. You know, it reminded me of something that I would just make for myself at home. You know, kind of like a big bowl of stuff.
A big bowl of stuff.
You know, I wish that I had hung around and gotten a few more meals from them or tried their brunch the next day. But I have to say, I was very pleased with my meal. I would definitely eat there a lot if I lived in the city. It was also very reasonably priced. I got a pretty big bowl of food for around $8. Hmm. So, yeah, I feel like a lot of places like that would normally charge 10 or 12 bucks for something of that nature. So Greenhouse Cafe was awesome. Also, Paul.
Yes, Andy.
I had an interesting experience. I had like stopped at a Walmart to use the bathroom on my trip. And as I was pulling out, this woman kind of stopped me and had my window rolled down. She walked up to me and she said, I just wanted to see what someone from Connecticut looks like.
Did she approve?
Well, I don't know. In that moment, I wished that I looked very bizarre. Like, I wished that I just looked like some horrible monster from another universe. And I was just kind of like, well, here I am. And I should have said, like, yep, we all look like me. just everyone here looks like you.
Yeah, just picture me, except thousands and thousands of us.
And then she said, do you have an accent? And I said, everybody has an accent. She's like, okay, well, you have a great day now. And then, and she had like, I can't do it, but she had like the stereotypical Fargo accent.
Oh, man.
It's very bizarre. Very bizarre.
For the listener, Andy, what states haven't you been to?
I have not been to Hawaii and Alaska and Montana. And it kills me because I was so close to Montana. But it was like 5 hours to get all the way to Montana, and I basically would have enough time to just, you know, touch my toe across the border and then head back.
Dip your toe into Montana.
Yeah, and I feel like I can't really say I've been to a state unless I've spent a decent amount of time there, you know, spend a night there at least. So
Unless you've eaten their one vegan option.
Yes. Yeah, I have to eat a meal there or spend a night there, or else it doesn't count. So yeah. Someday I will go. I'll go to Glacier National Park or something. And then I will have been to all of the lower 48, as they say.
Nice. Just more than most people.
Yes, that was fun. And then also, I'll just briefly say that as I was passing through Omaha, which is actually where I am right now at this very moment recording, and I got to go to the original Modern Love location.
Oh.
And it was very good.
Nice.
Did not disappoint. So it was cool.
Still have never been.
Yes. Well, we're going to get you there, Paul.
Yes.
Someday.
Well, I also want to, because we're going to be in New York this weekend, but I kind of also want to try the Impossible Burger. I don't know if that's going to be possible.
I'll tell you that it will not be possible because it's only served for lunch.
Dang it.
So, Paul.
Yes, Andy.
2 weekends ago, you were in Baltimore.
Baltimore.
And this past weekend, I believe you went down to Stellarware.
Also, I think both new places for me, I think. If we want to talk about how many states that I've been to, those I think are both two new places. No, I mean, I've been to Maryland, but I don't think I've ever been to Baltimore. And I don't know if I've ever been to Delaware besides just driving through.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Tell us about your time there.
Nah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Moving on.
I was down there for the Delaware Action for Animals 9th Annual Veg Fest. And they were gracious enough to invite Andy and myself to do a talk. But unfortunately, Andy couldn't make it. Andy, I really wish you could have been there. But so I went down there and talked about vegan stuff. But I just want to say, so this event... So I've been to, Andy's been to a lot of veg fests. I've been to some veg fests, and the veg fest kind of format is typically, you know, there's vendors that are like selling food, like restaurants. There's vendors that are selling, say, clothing items or other products or jewelry, stuff like that. There's organizations like nonprofit organizations kind of like giving out information about that. That's kind of like, and then there's some speakers, usually Vegan Treats is probably there with a 3-hour line. And so like, that's the typical veg fest format, but this one, the Delaware Actions for Animals 9th Annual Veg Fest, it said, heck no, we're not going to use that format. Instead, what they did was they just kind of, some people made food, some people brought food. They got a handful of restaurants to donate like one or two platters of food. And they just said, we're just going to set up and give out free food to anyone that wants to come.
Wow.
And I think that is a tremendously effective form of advocacy. Unfortunately, it was raining pretty darn hard that day. I'm pretty sure it was raining like literally everywhere in the United States.
Would you say it was raining cat cafes and dogs, Paul?
things to come, Andy. But spoiler alerts. So, and it was in a park, it was in a fairly big park. So unless you knew about this, you probably wouldn't notice it because there was really no one else in the park because it was raining so hard. But I can imagine on a nicer day, and if this was in like the 70s or 80s and there'd be tons of people just hanging out at the park, there's all these signs that say like, come get free food. And I think it would have exposed a lot of people to some really tasty, awesome vegan food. And it's kind of, honestly, it's kind of inspired me. I would, maybe when I move to Philadelphia in a few months, hopefully, it's like I kind of want to try to organize something similar. Just get a bunch of people together. Everyone makes, you know, one larger dish, maybe get some local vegan or vegetarian places to donate some vegan stuff and just kind of get whatever, I don't know, if you need some food licensing to do this, but just set it up and advertise that, like, come try out some free food. Because, you know, Andy, everyone loves free food. And I think it could do a great job at exposing people to how great vegan food can be. And in addition to that, they also... So there were two... there were only, like, two kind of booths set up, like the typical VegFest booths. One was the Humane League, and one was another kind of, like, animal adoption organization, I believe. Or there might have been a third kind of animal rescue organization set up as well.
But, it was just too big for you to check it out and see if there's a third booth, Paul?
Well, there wasn't a third booth, but I think there was another, because there was like picnic tables and there was one more organization set up. Shut up, Andy.
Paul, before you move on, I have an answer to your rhetorical question.
Which question was that?
Your question of who doesn't like free food?
Yeah.
I'll tell you who doesn't like free food.
Who?
Capitalists.
No capitalists allowed here in the Fetch Fest. But
they hate it when people give away free food.
but no, seriously, it was, I could see this being like a tremendously effective form of advocacy. And in addition, they also had something there that if I do end up kind of organizing something like this, which I would really, really like to when I move to Philly, they also had like little starter bags, like, oh, you're thinking about going vegan? Like, here's a pamphlet on like how to go vegan. So they had like starter bags that they gave to everybody. They had a table set up that, this was really cool. They had a table set up that was just kind of like, what do vegans eat? And it was just boxes that someone had collected of like all the different kinds of vegan food. So they had like the Earth Balance mac and cheese box. They had the like a couple different kinds of ice cream. They had all like Gardein chicken. They had the tofurkey sausages, like just the packages so that you can see like all the different types of food. And they had desserts. They had baking goods. They had like the fake meat products. So it was kind of the purpose of it was just to be like, hey, you don't like, you can eat all of these things and it's like, you're not really giving anything up. So I thought that was really cool as well. So this just, it's like, it was a bummer that it was so rainy, but they still got, I don't know, I would say 40, 50 people maybe came through during the day. It was a short event. It was only 3 hours, I think. There was like a silent auction. And it was just really cool. And I hope to see that replicated more because I worry that as much as I love going to veg fests, and I do love going to veg fests, especially ones that cost a little bit more money, like some of these veg fests are costing like $30 and up to get into, I doubt that those events are going to get too many hesitant non-vegans. It's like, you're not going to really convince someone that's not about this to pay $30 to get into something, you know, that they're just like, oh, people are, I'm just going to go, I'm not going to pay $30 for people to tell me I'm wrong about things, you know? But if you can say, if you can just say, hey, just come over here and eat some food. Like here's some free stuff. It's like, maybe, you know, maybe that could change some minds. So big props up to them for doing that. And I hope to see that kind of replicated more, and maybe people are doing it and maybe I just don't know about it, but,
Well, there is Food Not Bombs, Paul.
Yeah. This
and Chili's on Wheels.
Chili's on Wheels, yeah.
Not exactly the same thing, but it is sort of the similar concept. Doesn't have like the festival aspect and the speakers around it, but the idea of like, let's get some free vegan food and give it out to the masses.
Yeah, no, and I think those are awesome. Those are awesome too. I think an event like this would probably happen less regularly, so it has the kind of capabilities of, you know, getting more press out there, getting more flyer and getting more promotion out there, so it would hopefully be like a slightly larger event than the, I would say, equally if not more important, you know, groups like Food Not Bombs and Chili's on Wheels that are doing it like every single week or every other week and getting the food out to people that need it more regularly, which I think is, like I said, is also still incredibly important, if not more important.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. That I do love the free events. I would say the $30 event you're talking about is an outlier. A few fests I do charge $5 or $10 to get in. I'd say the vast majority of them are free. And you know, I don't know that every event needs to serve the same purpose. I think even the ones that are like maybe a little more exclusive to get into, it's kind of like a qualifier. Like if someone's paying $30 to get in, I mean, obviously that means they have, you know, certain economic advantages. They're willing to pay that much to just get in and shop. But it also means that they're like highly interested in veganism. Either they are vegan or they're like really wanting to go vegan. And I think those do serve a purpose of like helping to maintain the vegan community and getting people out to show them like, hey, it's fun to be vegan. Look at all these people that have like a similar interest to you. And I think that those are just as important as the ones that are designed towards, you know, exposing people to vegan information.
Oh, no doubt. Definitely no doubt. I just, I think I had just never really seen an event that to me felt more so like the purpose of it was to expose more people to veganism. And I thought that was really cool. But you're absolutely right that there's definitely importance in what I've seen as like the typical VegFest kind of format.
Yeah. And now I can use No Doubt for the outro music.
No Doubt. and isn't the guy vegan anyways?
Tony Canal, yeah. He bought a shirt for me.
Yeah. And he listens to the podcast, maybe. Hey, Tony. but yeah, the event was really cool. I don't know if it was just Delaware vegans, if it's just people from Delaware, if it's people from this specific area. Everyone was so gosh darn nice. It was absurd. And I was like, oh my God, everyone is so freaking nice. I loved it. And so, yeah, I did the little speech. I was ridiculously nervous. I'm sure people picked up that I was very nervous. I would have much rather just like recorded an episode with you, Andy, and had it more of like a conversation thing rather than just me talking to people. But, uh-huh. But yeah, I think it went really well. And yeah. Thank you to Jessica who let me stay at her place and also packed me tons and tons of snacks. For my ride home. That was really great.
Love good snacks. Now, oh, Paul, yeah. you gave your talk, your speech. Mm-hmm. You told me you got a lot of great feedback from that, but you never specified what that was. I'm curious, what kind of feedback did you get from your talk?
So the talk was, I think for people that are like used to the kinds of things that we were talking about, it would probably come as no surprise. I basically focused on three main things. Maybe we'll publish the speech on the website or something so that people can read it if they want to. But I basically focused on the fact that to keep in mind for vegan advocates that veganism is not about vegans. So just like trying to make sure that your advocacy is the most effective and efficient that it can possibly be. That was the first thing. Second thing was talking about nonviolent communication and how I believe that that's an effective form of advocacy, or that can be utilized to create a very effective form of advocacy, which we had a whole episode with an interview with Rama Ganesh on a while ago at this point about nonviolent communication. And then the third thing, which I was the most worried to talk about because I felt like I was worried about getting some backlash, was just to kind of about like intersectionality in the vegan community and why we shouldn't be actively avoiding it or actively saying that we can only focus on veganism and there's no room for other causes. And why we do want to embrace other causes and how it, and why it's going to strengthen the vegan community and the vegan movement. So I was worried that would kind of get some backlash, but people came up to me, and they said they dug what I was talking about and they appreciated me saying the things. And, so it was good. I was very nervous, but it was good.
Very nice, Paul.
Yeah.
I wish I could have been there.
And there was like someone playing music before me, like acoustic guitar music, and they did a cover of a Bouncing Souls song, and that was really cool too.
Paul, we're still using No Doubt for the outro music.
Okay, but and I also want to say, so while I was in just to talk about food in the food section, which we're still in right now, I also stopped at Drop Squad Kitchen, which is in Wilmington, Delaware. And I got told from a few different people after I had been there, a few different people were like, oh, have you tried any of the vegan place? And I was like, yeah, I was at Drop Squad Kitchen. And a few different people were like, oh, okay, that's the best place in Delaware. And I have to agree. I shouldn't say I have to agree because it's the only vegan place I've been to in Delaware. But it was great. It was you would love it, Andy. It was just vegan soul food. It was in an ice cream shop, like a dairy ice cream shop, which I didn't really understand what was going on. It's like on the like on the signs pointing, say like, oh, go to, I forget what it was, like Sally's or something. Like here, go around this corner for Sally's ice cream. And then you got to the storefront and then there was just a big sign that said Drop Squad Kitchen. So it's like they did serve dairy ice cream, but I don't know if it's like two separate establishments just combined into one or if it's the same people. But the like the food stuff that they had appeared to be completely vegan. I got a mac and cheese and then like a cheese steak, and they were both phenomenal. Everyone there seemed super duper nice. I would definitely go back there if I was in that area.
Very nice.
Yeah. And then on my way back, I was like, hey, Delaware is only like 45 minutes from Philadelphia and it's kind of in the same direction. So I made a quick detour to Philadelphia. I stopped at V Street and got some of those good old Peruvian fries with that sweet, sweet cheesy sauce that we've talked about one time.
The Ahi Amarillo sauce.
Oh, so good. And then the other bearded vegan favorite from V Street, the Dan Dan noodles.
Those dang Dan Dan noodles.
Dang Dan Dan noodles. So spicy. So the mushrooms are prepared. It's the best mushrooms that I've ever had in my life, basically.
I actually got my parents the V Street cookbook for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I've prepared the Dan Dan noodle dish. I didn't think it was quite as good as at the restaurant, but I have started using that preparation for mushrooms in lots of dishes, and it is just so good.
It's phenomenal.
It's like I never want mushrooms any other way.
So that was V Street. We've talked about it before. It's great. It's probably in my, like, it's a little more expensive, but it's probably in my, like, top five, if not top three vegan places in Philadelphia. But I also ventured to somewhere new, and this I think is going to lead to a not a lengthy discussion, but a slightly longer discussion of interest. And I stopped at the Kawaii Kitty Cafe. Andy, have you ever been to a cat cafe before?
I have not.
So for those of you not aware that this is a thing, I feel like they're starting to pop up. I don't know if they're, I wouldn't say they're super duper popular, but I've seen a few different ones pop up. I had never been to one either. Essentially, it's like a little cafe, and they had like coffee drinks, and they also had milkshakes, and you could make almost everything they had a vegan version of. They also sold Dottie's Donuts, so they had vegan donuts. They had like bagels, and you can have vegan cream cheese with them. So you order your food, and then you go into another, a different room, and then there's just cats there, and you just play with cats while you drink or eat your food. And that's the essence of it. And on the surface, so I went in there. I did not play with the cats because you need to like make a reservation and also pay $10. And I did not realize that. So I did not play with the cats. And on the surface, I wanted to check this out. On the surface, Andy, would you say it seems like you're it's exploiting the cats for the purposes of this cafe?
Well, having never been to a cat cafe and not being aware of how the cats are there to interact with people and all of that, I guess it's hard for me to really form much of an opinion, or at least like, this is my intuition on this type of service that's being provided, you know. But I guess overall it was like, okay, it seems like it's probably a good thing, right? If it's a platform for opening up adoption for cats, it seems like most cat cafes, that is kind of their angle with the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So essentially all of the cats that are there that you can play with come from this one adoption shelter. And they're I was reading a little bit, like a little blurb about this specific cafe. And it was saying, it's like, yeah, it's like we'd rather have cats that are able to like interact with other cats or other people rather than just kind of like sitting in crates in adoption shelters. So it's like we bring them here, and it's like when people play with them, they're more likely to adopt them. So you can literally call the cafe and adopt the cats for like an adoption fee. I think it was $100 if it's a kitten and $50 if it's a regular cat. And while I was there, and I was only there for about 20 minutes, someone did call in and adopt one of the cats. So,
and then they yanked a cat out of a child's arms.
So, I mean, I have to think that it's a more effective way of getting these cats adopted, because it's like not everyone is going to think like, oh, I'm going to adopt a cat today. But some people might just walk by this, and they of course have the cat play area like against the window of the storefront, so you can literally see inside and see all these cats. So it's going to like entice people to come in, and people are going to play with the cats. And I think they're obviously going to be more likely to adopt them than not. So it's like, I got to think that it's a good thing. And that there's like rules for the cat room. And it says like, obviously don't feed the cats. You can actually buy cat food to feed them, but it says like, don't feed the cats any of the people food, and don't like touch the cats if they're sleeping, and obviously be gentle with the cats and stuff like that. So it's like, I got to think that it's a kind of cool idea to get these cats adopted.
Yeah. Well, is there like a but to that?
I don't know. It's like, I want to, like, I've processed this a lot of times in my mind, and it's like, I haven't been able to find the cat butt yet.
Can't find that cat butt, huh?
Can't find that cat butt.
Well, I did a wee bit of research into this whole thing, and I found a few articles that were talking about why various folks, including people from certain shelters, don't think that the cat cafe model is particularly great.
Okay.
You know, a lot of it is around the fact that, you know, cats are these kind of solitary creatures, and putting them in an environment where they have this constantly rotating cast of people coming in and wanting to touch them, that kind of stresses them out. It's not the best format for them. Mm-hmm. But then similar articles were also talking about places that have rules in effect, seemingly like this place does. And actually, side note, I'm pretty sure this place won some award from the chili competition that I was a judge at.
Huh.
I forget exactly which one it was, but I remember thinking that it was very good. Anyway, so that there are some cafes that had been shut down for like health code violations and animal welfare violations. And then there's some that have these very strict rules, similar to what you were saying, like don't pet the cats if they're sleeping, don't give them food. And I'm guessing the making of reservations is a way to sort of meter out the people that are going in, so there's not too many people trying to interact with the cats all at once and overwhelming them.
Yeah.
I wonder if, like, I wonder if it is a good thing to try and get people to do the, like, spur of the moment, on the spot, like wanting to adopt a cat. Because if you go to a shelter with the aim to adopt a cat, chances are you've really thought about what it means to adopt a cat, you know, the responsibilities that come along with that. But if you're just sort of in a cafe and you're like, oh, this cat's so cute, I want to adopt them, you know, maybe that person, maybe they've thought about it for a while, but maybe it's someone that's just kind of taking on an animal that's not really ready for it, and maybe that's not the best thing for the cat.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think I'm with you, Paul. Like, in general, I'm like, it seems like if this is a way to get cats adopted, that it's better for them. And maybe even that trade-off of like, okay, maybe this is a more stressful environment for them, but if ultimately it leads to them being adopted and out of a shelter, which I imagine a shelter is probably not the most stress-free environment for a cat either.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that trade-off is worth it.
Yeah. And I will say too, like, the room was small. I mean, this is like in Philadelphia, so this building is not very large.
Yeah, they don't have big buildings in Philadelphia.
You know what I mean. Shut up, Andy. a cat cafe is not going to buy like this huge, like rent out this huge. Shut up, Andy. The room was like pretty small with the cats. However, there were a lot of, I didn't count how many cats there were. I don't think there was a tremendous amount, but there were a lot of like, and they were like little cat, they were like little cat sheltery type things. So it's like, I would hope that a cat that just didn't really want to interact with people would just kind of go into one of those. And I did see some cats in those. And so that kind of seems like it lends itself nicely to the like, hey, don't, you know, like, don't disturb the cats that don't want to be disturbed type of deal. So, you know, like, if the cat's just chilling in one of those little sheltery type things, just take a picture of them. And the cat's really cute, so you don't have to disturb them.
Paul, the big question, though.
Yes.
What did you eat at this cafe?
Oh, I almost forgot that I ordered like this, the most lavishly decorated milkshake that I've ever had in my life. Like, I've seen on like BuzzFeed and people posting these videos on Facebook, these like viral videos of these like extravagant milkshakes and stuff. And I've never actually had one. So it was cool. I actually got to try one. I got this cookies and cream milkshake. Did I post a picture on the Instagram? If I didn't, I'm definitely going to post it.
No, you definitely did, because it made me drool and I was very sad.
Yeah, so it was a cookies and cream milkshake. It had like Oreos sticking out of it. It had literal cake frosting lining the insides of the glass, and also lining a good inch or two of the rim of the outside of the glass, and then there were sprinkles smushed onto that frosting, so it was kind of like a sprinkle coating on the outside of the glass, and there was like all this like whipped cream on top too, and whipped cream and also more frosting on top. I
seems like too much frosting.
Oh, it was so much sugar. But I will say this, it was a good milkshake. It was very Instagrammable. It was not the best milkshake I've ever had. But it was good. It was $10, so that's an expensive ass milkshake, but you're paying for someone to literally decorate this for like 15 minutes for someone to create this masterpiece of a milkshake. But I did, like, I spooned all the frosting and all the sprinkles, it just ate it, which was in retrospect too much. It was too much sugar. Easily could have been shared with another person, even though like the amount of actual milkshake was not tremendous, just the sugar content of everything combined was extraordinary.
Well, it certainly looked beautiful.
Yeah, so check out that picture on our Instagram. It looks great.
Yeah, a lot of good food picks up in the Instagram lately, so definitely go check that out. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun stuff happening there.
Yes. So let's get into, I guess, our news section / main section, which is just this smorgasbord, this plethora of different news items.
Yes. So the first thing we wanted to do was a little bit of follow-up from two episodes ago, episode 79, when we talked about an action that turned violent and involving Direct Action Everywhere members, although they said that it wasn't officially a DXE action, but we talked about, you know, whether or not we thought it could be classified as such. We came down on the side of yes, if it's DXE members using DXE tactics and they claim to be a decentralized organization, that, you know, even if it's not officially a DXE action, it still warrants a discussion around the tactics and what that means and all of those things. So we got a few correspondence from folks on either side of this issue. So thank you very much to everyone that had been emailing in and leaving comments on the Facebook and the Commentist, all that good stuff. A few people pointed out that the Direct Action Everywhere Los Angeles Facebook page posted a statement about the whole incident, and we're wondering what our take on the whole thing was. So let's talk about that right now. I guess let's start out by just reading a little bit from their statement.
Yeah, the statement starts off, they just kind of reiterate what Andy was just saying, how this was not a DXE event, but there were activists that were involved in DXE, and they want to reiterate that DXE is nonviolent. And then they say, since some of the activists involved in Friday's incident did not act in accordance with our values, we are taking action to prevent similar incidents from occurring in the future. We have made the decision that the activists who disregarded our values, both in this incident and on multiple occasions, will no longer be welcome at our events. While we hope that those involved will be taking steps to ensure nonviolence on their part in the future, we are also taking steps to emphasize the importance of nonviolence in the animal rights movement. We will be putting much more emphasis on nonviolence before each of our actions, and we will be announcing a series of nonviolence trainings soon. So on the surface, I guess that seems like a good thing, Andy? Question mark?
Yeah, I think on the surface it seems like a pretty solid statement, you know, but I've seen it with DXE before, that there's been people that have been confirmed, you know, sexual predators, and they've been kicked out, and then you see them being re-embraced by the community, the DXE community, once again. So this is kind of like one of those things where I'm like, I'll see it when I believe it, but like, I hope that this is something they're actually working to take the steps on. And then my other thought, and kind of the main thought about the whole thing, is that I don't think that this action went as bad as it did because there was a lack of training around nonviolence. you know, this, I think that this happened because it's symptomatic of the larger culture that this group is trying to cultivate, which is one that is more interested in creating viral videos than they are in creating new vegans, you know, and this is kind of a thing that people have brought up every time I say, like, I don't think that these actions really are creating new vegans or creating much change for animals. People say, well, yeah, that's not the point. We're trying to make new activists. Like, you're missing the point if you think all we're trying to do is influence the people in the video, like the bystanders, to go vegan. To which I would say, well, what's the point? Isn't it like a feedback loop if you're just making videos to make more activists, to make more videos, to make more activists, and like nowhere along the way is there like an emphasis on creating change for animals? You know, it's kind of this culture that really values pats on the back and likes, and they get posted within their own groups and everyone calls them a hero. But like, what really happened for the animals? And we saw plenty of people call these two individuals heroes for what they did. They said they were sticking up for animals, but I don't think a damn thing changed for animals during the course of this action.
And an important note, when you say they make more videos to make more activists, to make more videos to make more activists, these are activists who are probably already vegan, not people that are becoming vegan and activists, just vegans that are then becoming activists, right?
Yeah. I mean, I bet someone could point to a few cases of folks that weren't necessarily vegan when they joined the organization and now they are. I know that's kind of one of their things, is that like, we don't need more vegans, we need more activists. And they welcome people in, whether they're vegan or not. I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, I think it's good. Like, people should be welcomed in and then have all that positive influence surrounding them. But I don't think that that's the main goal of the activism.
Yeah. And so, and to comment on something that you said about, like, you posed the question, like, it would nonviolence training have affected anything in this situation? And I like you, would be interested to see like what this training consists of, because if the kind of training that they put forward focuses on like either getting out of escalating situations or how to de-escalate situations, I think that possibly could be beneficial in that it could have a like an attitude change of in some part of how their activism kind of goes, right? Because it's like, if they get trained to say like, hey, stop like egging people on all the time, stop just like yelling at people, stop doing these sorts of things, it's like, if that's what they do, and that's what I would assume, like nonviolent, because I don't think they're nonviolent, I would hope their nonviolence training isn't just gonna be like, hey, don't punch people, don't spit on people, don't push people, that's it, okay, see you later. It's like, I don't think that's really going to do much. But if they actually do want to make changes, it's like, I think they would have to take a look at, I would hope, they would have to take a look at like this attitude that they are creating, and that is basically creating incredibly tense situations. Like, I would think nonviolence training would consist of how to de-escalate situations, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Do we think that if this action happened the way it did, and then, but the spitting never happened and there was no broken jaw, and then they just left at some point after like really putting all this pressure on these bouncers, I doubt this would be getting addressed, even though so many of the issues were still there. You know, you still have white folks ganging up on a black worker of color. And you think about like, who has the freedom to leave that situation? You know, the bouncer doesn't have the freedom to leave that situation. Yeah. Like, obviously they could, but with lots of repercussions, you know, losing their job and all the the ripple effect that could possibly have, mm-hmm. versus activists who leave and still have whatever jobs they may happen to have, still have the friends they may happen to have. And, you know, it's been pointed out that they're kind of, in many ways, they're really like weaponizing their whiteness, you know, just taunting this bouncer to call the police if he has a problem. And but at the same time, like, they're like, oh, we don't want to deal with the cops, you know. But it's like there's so many levels to why we found this particular action really just problematic, that it's not going to be fixed with a simple nonviolence training. But you know, with that said, it's like, I hope that they do work to implement those things. But again, it's kind of like one of those, I'll believe it when I see it type things. We will keep our eye on this one and update people as new information comes in. Thank you to everyone else that sent the statement to us, and we'll see what develops.
Mm-hmm. All right. What's this little thing down here, Andy?
This is just because we had our atheism episode and we talked about Richard Dawkins in it. And Richard Dawkins recently announced that he is vegetarian now.
Huh. That's
good. So maybe atheism does lead to and require, you know, not veganism yet, but I bet he could get there.
Yeah. Have you seen any, like, statements about why or anything like that?
The big, very inflammatory statement that he made was something along the lines of, when I see the cattle cars, like, on the railways, it reminds me of the train cars that were going to Auschwitz.
Hmm.
So it's, you know, I'm not sure of his lineage or whatever, so it's pretty inflammatory. It's not an article I'm going to repost necessarily. Yeah. Also, because he's just kind of like an insufferable atheist. You know, we talked about how, like, super smug atheists like are really turn me off, even though I am very much a staunch atheist myself. But I do hope that he can help to influence his community that he's very, very, very much a leader of.
Mm-hmm.
I would say he's probably the most prominent atheist in the world, or at least in the top three. So
is it him, Bill Nye, and Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Are they all atheists?
And Penn Jillette.
Penn Jillette's too busy giving people the popcorn test to talk about atheism.
Oh, call that.
Throwback.
Andy. Yeah, that was good. One person got that reference.
All right. Let's move along into some new news.
New news.
New news. So I've seen a few people posting this article going around from The Guardian. And it says, eating cheese does not raise risk of heart attack or stroke, study finds. So this is the new article that you're going to see posted around to be like, ha, vegans, you were wrong. But to read briefly from this article, consuming cheese, milk, and yogurt, even full-fat versions, does not increase the risk of a heart attack or stroke, according to research that challenges the widely held belief that dairy products can damage health. The results come from a new meta-analysis of 29 previous studies of whether dairy products increase the risk of death from any cause and from either serious heart problems or cardiovascular disease. The study concluded that such foodstuffs did not raise the risk of any of those events and had a, quote, neutral impact on human health. So this came out, and, like, the first thing I thought was, like, who cares? Like, it's still, you know, it's still, like, to obtain dairy from cows, you know, we have to take their babies away, and it's still forcing them to live lives of abject misery, you know. So I'm just like, ugh, this doesn't matter. This is just a thing that we're going to get bogged down in internet debates, and people are going to be arguing whether cheese is healthy or not. And we know that, like, yes, in general, we can basically rely on saying eating fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds are a healthy thing for us to eat. But, you know, so many things, it's like, oh, chocolate's healthy, chocolate's not healthy, et cetera. All these things go back and forth, and this is, like, another version of that. So I'm just like, ugh, now we have to deal with this. And then I noticed all the way at the very, very bottom of this article is kind of a little throwaway line. The research was part funded by three pro-dairy groups, Global Dairy Platform, Dairy Research Institute, and Dairy Australia. But they had no influence over it, the paper says. So it's like, okay, this is not only something we have to contend with. This is another study funded by the dairy industry. So this is like when, you know, cigarette companies, tobacco companies were funding studies saying that, like, smoking tobacco isn't bad for your health.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I mean, it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, I feel like this is where the health argument fails us, because we get bogged down in trying to prove these things that ultimately are, like, inconsequential to the ethical argument.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, on the other end too, just to be fair, like, a lot of times the vegan stuff of research that people quote is also from vegan doctors or plant-based doctors too, you know?
Yeah.
So it's,
yeah,
like, I feel like people could make that same argument against some of that research.
Yeah, it's like, we don't need to play this game.
Yeah.
Although, it's like it's wasting our time, I think.
Yeah. Although at the same time, if a medical researcher or a nutrition researcher or whoever did find out, say they were researching something about a vegan diet and they found out that it was, quote, the healthiest diet, it's like they probably would want to go vegan then. So I guess that makes more sense. It's not like a researcher is going to find out that eating cheese is good for you or eating cheese isn't bad for you, and then all of a sudden this person is just like eating wheels of cheese on a daily basis. like box trolls.
Chili's on cheese willies.
but yeah, I mean, in the end, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's like there's plenty of vegan yogurts. I feel like the vegan yogurt and cheese game has been growing exponentially over the past like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, when I went vegan, Daya wasn't even a thing that was available. And that was like mind blowing at the time. And now it's like, oh, Daya is not good. Everyone has it. It's not interesting. Doesn't taste good anymore. Like, we can be picky about our vegan cheeses now.
Yeah. And then with the non-dairy milk game, Ripple coming out in full blast this past year, I think. Oh, I love it. Can't get enough Ripple.
You love that Ripple.
I love it. But
I'm lukewarm on the Ripple. It's fine.
Lukewarm Ripple. I would still drink that.
Yes. So anyway, you know, if someone posts this on your wall as like a gotcha thing, point out who it's funded by and then just say, you know, no matter what, dairy comes from a grieving mother.
Yeah. And I mean, you could also say, like, just because something is not necessarily not terrible for you doesn't mean you have to have it.
Yeah, it just said it was neutral. Like, that's the best they could do, was say it was neutral.
Yeah.
Neutral, yeah. Milk hotel.
So this second to last article that we're going to talk about is coming at us from NPR, and it's titled Chinese Chicken is Headed to America, but it's really all about the beef. And reading a little bit from it. Cooked chicken from birds grown and raised in China soon will be headed to America in a trade deal that's really about beef. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross announced Thursday night that the U.S. was greenlighting Chinese chicken imports and getting U.S. beef producers access to China's nearly 1.4 billion consumers. But the deal is raising concerns among critics who point to China's long history of food safety scandals. The Chinese appetite for beef is huge and growing, but American beef producers have been locked out of that market since a case of mad cow disease cropped up in the U.S. in 2003. In response, many countries, including South Korea, Japan, Mexico, and China, banned imports of U.S. beef. It's a very big market. It's at least a $2.5 billion market that's being opened up for U.S. beef, Ross said in announcing the trade deal. American beef producers are rejoicing that the process has finally resulted in allowing them to send beef to China. After being locked out of the world's largest market for 13 years, we strongly welcome the announcement that an agreement has been made to restore U.S. beef exports to China, Craig Uden, president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, said in a statement. It's impossible to overstate how beneficial this will be for America's cattle producers, and the Trump administration deserves a lot of credit for getting this achieved. Ooh. play the womp, 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 womp.
Paul, first off, isn't this the exact opposite of that one article that we covered way back before the election? The guy that was like super pro Trump, and it was saying that like Trump's gonna cut off all this trade and get rid of NAFTA and all these things, and that's gonna mean that like way less animals are gonna get imported.
Yeah.
Which, so I guess, which that guy was way wrong.
Yeah. Womp, 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 womp. Which, you know, I mean, from how Trump like used to talk about China, I guess that was like a kind of good prediction maybe, but now he's kind of like, hey, everyone can do anything. Anyone that's a giant corporation can literally do anything that they want. And that is bad news for a lot of cattle.
Turns out Donald Trump is a piece of shit.
Turns out. But yeah.
Who knew?
Anytime the president of a beef association says it's impossible to overstate how beneficial this would be.
Yeah.
Means it's probably not a good thing for vegans.
Not a good thing for cows, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not a good thing for cows. And then there was another article that I had found, or you, Andy, you found this from Global Meat News. I don't know why you're checking out Global Meat News, traitor.
I have my reasons.
But basically, I'm not going to read through that article. I won't give it the time. But it was basically saying how in China, like, the demand for beef has been increasing, but China hasn't really been able to sustainably meet that demand. And in response, they might be creating like more factory farms, but then that could also, that it can also probably tie into this idea that now they're open for US imports of beef and cattle. So it's just not good. It's not good for the animals at all, really.
Yeah, it's a bummer. And I guess from the research that I was doing and finding out, like, well, why do they need to import this, the cow flesh to China, is that they don't really have, like, the land that, like, the amount of land needed to support the population's growing demand. And that, like, essentially this is the result of people having higher incomes and sort of wealth growing, and cow flesh is seen as a more of a sign of affluence, and so it's more desirable than like chicken or like pig's flesh. So like that population is booming, and that means that like this demand for cow flesh is growing, and opening it up to the US to send imports in, you know, it's safe to say that if that didn't happen, the amount of people that want to eat cows there in China would not be able to, at least not from the US. So yeah, it's definitely horrible for cows all around.
And I wonder if, like, you know, this might mean that the operations in the United States are going to be growing instead of, because, you know, it's like I've seen things that's like people are eating less meat in the United States and the kind of consumption is going down. But now with this kind of, if this creates kind of like a boom in that industry, is that going to spill over into the United States again and be like, where I don't know. I'm just speculating. Could it possibly have the effect of, like, because the industry is then growing again, it just kind of affects the general public's perception of like how much meat they should be eating. I don't know. Do you think, am I way off with this? Is it impossible to tell?
I don't know. I don't know if, you know, supply is going to dictate the demand in this case.
Yeah.
But I know it's not good for cows. It's certainly horrible for the environment. As I was crossing the state line from Nebraska, as I was crossing the state line from South Dakota into Nebraska, I stopped at their little welcome center, and I stepped out of the car and I started to gag and my eyes started to water. And I immediately knew that we were near an animal agriculture operation, or they were spraying the manure in the fields. Jeez. Because it was just miserable. And, you know, you pass these operations on the highway, you can smell them for miles to come.
Yeah.
And it's just, ugh. It
imagine,
is
like,
disgusting.
Working there or like living around there.
Yeah, yeah. It's really horrible, especially in, like, you know, pig operations, and, you know, as we've seen in What the Health and Cowspiracy, and they talk about like the communities living around hog farms. And I'm reading James McWilliams' new book. I think it's new. His new book, Just Food, right now, and he was talking about the environmental impact of raising animals for food, and talking about communities where they're, you know, have these big agriculture operations, and certain days kids go outside to play and they're just gagging and vomiting because of how horrible, you know, the immediate air pollution is from these facilities. So,
jeez.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's a little aside, but that's something we can look forward to more of that as this kind of change in trade operations is going to affect things.
That sucks.
It's messed up.
So on that note, should we move on into our last, also not really great news item?
Yeah, let's do it.
Man, we not really bringing the. I was like, when we first started writing the notes for this, I was like, oh, let's make this a lighter episode. Nope, that didn't happen.
Nope, not at all. But so people may have seen like petitions going around to get Domino's to add vegan options to their menus, vegan cheese, vegan meat toppings.
and there was the big old Veg News April Fool's Day prank that we also reposted that was like, they're offering 6 new vegan pizzas with all these wild toppings, but not pineapple. And so as it turns out, Domino's has made a definitive decision as to whether or not they're going to offer vegan options beyond what they currently have, which is you can get, I forget which type of crust, but they have a crust that's vegan and their sauce is vegan. So you can get like a cheeseless, shitty veggie covered pizza from them. But this article coming from the old Huffington Post says Domino's Pizza doesn't care about feeding vegans. So PETA was behind the big old campaign to get them to add options. And there was petitions, but they were also going about buying stock in the company. So they had a place at the shareholders meeting. But reading from this article at the Huffington Post, PETA's idea of incorporating cruelty-free food in the kitchen was more than handily nixed. Fewer than 0.28% of votes from Domino's shareholders supported the vegan proposal, the Detroit Free Press reported.
That's not that many.
That is way less than 1%. Yeah, I'm no math teacher, Paul, but 0.28% probably means just the person from PETA voted for it.
Oh, no.
Anyway, PETA owns 39 shares of Domino's stock worth about $3,000, which McIntyre referred to as basically the minimum amount of shares you need to own to put a resolution on a public company's proxy. And McIntyre is the big wig over there at Domino's. In the past few years, the animal welfare advocates have made an impact with other companies. The organization moved Chipotle to incorporate more humane slaughtering practices and pushed IKEA and Subway to include vegan offerings on their menus. So I guess, one, that's a bummer. Like, it'd be nice to have like a major chain offer vegan options that are fun and interesting.
Yeah.
McIntyre says that they tested vegan cheese and just no one really wanted it and no one really cared. And I wonder if they actually did, because I feel like a lot of vegans would lose their shit if that happened.
Yeah.
Like, people would be so excited about it. But obviously, if they're just showing it to a couple like random Joe Schmoes on the street, they're probably less excited about the whole thing.
Yeah.
As far as I know, like, the biggest pizza chains that have vegan cheese is Blaze Pizza and Mellow Mushroom.
But then the only one that matters is Blackbird.
Oh, strong words. So in this article, it kind of feels like McIntyre's like, yeah, no one really cared, and we've tested it, and no one really wanted it. But then, continuing my tradition of looking at news sources on the animal agriculture side of the field, Paul, I found this one from brownfieldagnews.com with the title, Domino's Stands Its Ground Against Animal Rights Extremists.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah, they have, like, a little interview with McIntyre, and McIntyre says, in reference to them trying to activists either trying to get the vegan options on their plate or even just trying to influence them to use cage-free eggs or whatever it might be. Over the years, because we've taken the tact of what I'll call leaning into the punch, and we've always taken the punch and sometimes we punch back, we've been lucky enough to see that the extremists will go away when they realize that we're not going to cave, he says. The best answer is to be deaf, to not hear them, to not respond, to not give them a platform. The biggest mistake we make is believing that they are reasonable people. We've learned they're not. That's why they're called extremists. So,
jeez.
Certainly kind of showing one face in the HuffPo article and another face in the brownfieldagnews.com.
What a dick.
Yeah, and, you know, his whole thing is like, we're never going to tell the farmers how to do their job, and, you know, we treat them well, they treat us well. We're, you know, we recognize that, you know, without farmers, there is no food and all that stuff. And it's like, yeah, vegans want farmers to make great food for people. It's just we don't want people killing sentient beings. Anyway, Paul, I'm curious, like, one, bummer, because it'd be cool to be able to go to Domino's when I'm in the middle of nowhere and I'm sick of Taco Bell. But also, I'm curious what you think about this tactic of buying shares of a company and trying to impact them that way.
I mean, I would think, like, my initial thought would be, well, you would need quite a few to have any sort of actual effect. But I mean, if it's impacted Chipotle, IKEA, and Subway, those are all major operations. Those are all major companies, and unless they've bought in a lot more than maybe they did in Domino's, or if for some reason the Domino's vote failed so much more miserably than how things have gone in the past. Like I was saying, my initial thought would be that it just wouldn't work. Like, you wouldn't have enough money to buy in as much as you would need to. But it's like, I'm interested to know more about how they were successful with some other companies.
Well, I'm thinking about like Subway. I remember Subway, that was a big campaign from Compassion Over Killing as well. I guess they were probably just taking the public influence route, like letters to the, you know, the corporation, et cetera. And PETA was taking the shareholders meeting route. But they introduced three vegan patties, vegan, you know, like burger type things.
I've never been able to find them, though.
I found them once. I was driving past a Subway in Milford, and I saw on their little like light up sign, the little LED sign said, "Try our new vegan options." And I was
"That's
like,
cool."
And I like did a U-turn and I
but,
went and got
but
it.
But you just said that out loud. You didn't actually turn your car around.
Yes.
You just said,
"No." I also said out loud, "Oh, what?"
And you did a triple take.
Yes. And I went there, and they were introducing three, and it was like a black bean patty, a Malibu patty, which is kind of like a just like a veggie burger. And then the one they didn't have was like a barbecue riblet thing, which is obviously the one I really wanted.
Yeah.
But they heated it up. Like, they didn't microwave the patties separately. Like, when they toasted the bread, they put the patties. I got the Malibu one. They put the patties on the bread. So it got like 30 seconds of toasting, and the patties were cold. Like, they were not instructed on how to cook them correctly.
Oh, my God.
And it just wasn't very good. And I haven't seen them since, and they failed miserably. So, as far as I can tell, they failed miserably. I don't go into Subways very often, but, you know, they offer, again, some relief from Taco Bell. So I.
Wait, Andy,
you know,
you don't like a giant loaf of bread with a minimal amount of vegetables inside a vegetable sandwich?
You should see. I used to work at Subway. I used to be a sandwich artist, Paul.
I didn't
yes,
know
I did.
That.
That was my first job.
Huh. But yeah, no, it just doesn't seem like, unless you have people attacking from multiple angles, which is like what you were maybe referencing for Subway, it might not be effective. But then again, like, if that's what is going to be effective, attacking from multiple angles, then you do need someone that's going to be doing that. And, you know, I'd rather have PETA doing that than some of their other stuff.
Yeah. And I have to think, if they were successful in this bid and they spent $3,000 to get shares and they did influence Domino's to carry vegan options, like, you know, I would say that's probably $3,000 well spent. I know they waste significantly more money on way less effective tactics.
Yeah.
So,
like, PETA is getting a lot of money, and like, this would be the kind of stuff that I would want them to be putting it towards. If this is going to be effective. I mean, I think hopefully someone, like, I don't know enough about this. I don't know enough about how effective this is going to be to really make a judgment one way or the other. But I would hope that someone in PETA HQ is analyzing, like, hey, this is going to be something that's going to work. And they're not just like, let's just spend a lot of money on this.
Well, we got $3,000 extra laying around. Yeah, whatever. Throw it at Domino's.
Like, maybe they had more money for the other organizations, and that's why it was more effective. I don't know.
Yeah. And also, you have to think that perhaps, like, I don't know, Chipotle. I'm not sure exactly what reforms PETA helped push through with them. But, you know, they're a company that's already trying to make that their thing.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
You know, obviously you and I are not like super into welfare reforms. But, you know, it's like, OK, if you're just trying to get them to adopt one more animal welfare platform, like it seems like a much lower hanging fruit than like Domino's and like Subway. It's like it would make sense for them to have a couple of vegan patties because like their whole thing is like we're really healthy.
Yeah.
So it's like natural for them, but like pizza, no one really thinks that is healthy. They're not a chain that's like trying to talk about how sustainable they are. So, and you have this dick at the head of the top of the chain that's like,
I don't know enough about this. And I think we just don't even have enough information about necessarily like the Chipotle move or the IKEA move or the Subway move to know if they did something similar or maybe a little bit different, or maybe they spent more money. Like, I think that this could be effective. Like wedging your way into the decision process, even if it's just a little bit, it's like, I think you could start planting some seeds there, planting some vegan seeds there, or planting some ideas that could lead to that. So it's like, I think that that could be good. I think that it should be, you know, like analyzed further to make sure that you are putting your money, because I think it would require a decent amount of money into the most into it the most effective ways possible. But I think it could be good.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, someone could look at it like you're supporting this organization that really exploits animals pretty horribly. You know, I see that would probably be the other side of the coin, is like, why are you investing in a company that is doing horrible things to animals?
But because they're trying to change that.
Yeah, but they're giving them money.
Yeah, I guess I see what you're saying. But I don't know. Do you think that maybe they had to do with the Chipotle adding the sofritas option?
I cannot say one way or the other.
Like, I feel like that would have been mentioned in this article. Like, what?
Yeah,
that
they said it was just welfare.
Yeah, but so. Because I do love that.
It's all right. It's kind of salty.
What? Get out of here.
No free guac.
get out of here. No free guac.
So I guess this is a tactic we would like to see explored more. I think especially in terms of PETA, when it's like with all the things that they have been putting their money into. It's like, yeah, go ahead and throw a couple $1,000s into this type of advocacy and stop, you know, doing some of the other horrible stuff you're doing.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you know, it's like $3,000 is not going to make or break Domino's.
Yeah.
So it's not enough money that like Domino's is going to be like, well, we were failing and then PETA bought into us and now we're back in action and they failed. So ha 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 PETA.
Yeah. All right, Paul, I think it's about time we wrap this news sesh up.
Wrap it up.
Yeah. So what do y'all think out there? You can send us an email. You let us know, thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. We got thebeardedvegans.com, the Facebook, the Instagram, all that good stuff. What news item did we miss that you wanted us to talk about? Send it over to us. We'll talk about it maybe in the next episode.
Yeah, sorry. I thought this episode was going to be a little bit more happy, and it was not. But maybe next week we'll talk about something a little more uplifting, but probably not.
Seems unlikely.
Yeah, does seem unlikely. So yeah, Andy, do you got any events coming up?
Sure. June 3rd, I'll be at the Cleveland Veg Fest, Cleveland, Ohio. June 10th, Paul will be at the Vegan Street Fair in New York City.
Yay.
June 11th, I will be at the Asheville Vegan Fest in Asheville, North Carolina. June 24th, I'll be at the Richmond Veg Fest in Richmond, Virginia. And June 25th, I'll be going overnight to the vegan pop-up in Morristown, New Jersey. So that should be a lot of fun. Come out. Come to the Compassion Company table. Find either me or Paul.
Get some
buttons.
Ask us
for a button.
Sorry, stole your thunder on that one.
Damn it, Paul. Did you give out any buttons in Delaware?
Oh, I gave out a few buttons, yeah. Yeah,
very nice.
Some people want some buns.
No one's names. No one's names, though.
Oh, sorry.
Well,
I was too nervous. I wasn't thinking about names. I was thinking about not peeing my pants while I was standing up there giving that talk.
Oh, Paul, my precious tropical fish. So it seems like importing beef to China is a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I can think of 7 words that I would love for you to import into my ear holes.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
The room was actually a cardboard box with one cat sitting in the box.
And one person standing above the cat with a pot of coffee just waiting to serve you. But
Cat-fee.
So
is it cat-finated?
Shut up, Andy. Hey, Andy.
Yes, Paul.
I think I'll read the statement because I think people like to hear my reading voice.
Let's get to this final news item. So people may have seen.
People.
So I used to be a sandwich artist. I know how to speak to these people. I know how to talk their language. And I always ask for like a ton of spinach. And I ask for, I'm like, put a ridiculous amount of olives on this sandwich. I was like, put what you think is like an unreasonable amount of olives on this sandwich.
And then put one more handful.
Yes, because the Subway standards are 3 olives per 6 inch.
What?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You say to them, take out those 3 olives, put them aside, and then dump the rest of the olive container onto the sandwich.
You save those 3 olives for the next 6 inch that comes along.
Man, the pizza corporations are just headed by just bad people, apparently.
Did you see the thing about Papa John's guy?
Well, I feel like, was there something recently that happened or just in general that he's a turd?
There's a photo that people claim is of him naked, like humping a giant fish,
what?
Basically, like laying on the deck of a boat. And then I guess it has been confirmed that it's not actually him, but it looks exactly like him.
Someone's trying to sabotage him.
What's the other example you have for heads of pizza being jerks?
Oh no, Papa John was the person I was referring to.
Okay, is there something else about him?
Well, isn't he was trying to? I will Google this real quick. Wasn't he?
Oh, wait,
trying
no, no, no. It was Jimmy John's.
What is Jimmy John's?
Their sandwich chain. Jimmy John's. We always joke about if Jimmy John made a mixtape for the gym, it would be called Jimmy John's Gym Jams.
I do not remember this at all. But I typed in Papa John, and the first thing that comes up is Papa John drunk. But I'm Googling this, Papa John minimum wage. Papa John's profits are up 25%. That's why CEO John Schnatter's threat to cut workers' hours and raise the price of pizza by up to 14 cents to offset the company's cost of Obamacare resulted in the widespread boycott of the pizza chain.
Wait, his last name is Schnatter's?
I think so, yeah.
That's why he calls it Papa John's, because Papa Schnatter's doesn't have the same ring.